is a presentation of KSL Sports. Hello, Cougar Nation.
Who's open for three? Angle left takes it and makes it. Fuseni Traore. And listen to the Cougar Nation.
Every Monday night, we break down the last week of BYU basketball and look ahead to the Cougars' prospects for the postseason. Cougar Nation. Here's BYU insider Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte on Utah's legacy home of the Cougars, KSL News Radio.
Cougar Nation, glad to have you on board. Wish we were talking about a win today as we break down the loss against Texas Tech last weekend. But nonetheless, we bring this show to you every single Monday night, taking your calls 801-575-8255 to get your thoughts on the game. Why do you think BYU has struggled in the second half of a lot of these Big 12 games? We'll be taking those calls, getting your thoughts, Cougar Nation, like we do every single Monday night. Matt Biamonte here. Mitch Harper, he's off tonight. He's at Disneyland, a little family vacation. So it's going to be myself and producer Nate Slack. Nate, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. It's a Monday, but I'm hanging in there, and it's going to be a fun show.
It's going to be a lot of fun today as we break down this game. Before we get into the takeaways, Nate, just quick thoughts on that loss against Texas Tech.
It hurt. I mean, talking to other people on Twitter during the game, talking about how the first half of that game felt like it's the best half that BYU's played in a long time. I think back to the 2021 WCC championship against Gonzaga. But other than that, I mean, it's been years since I feel like BYU had that strong of a half. And then to come out in the second half and then have everything fall apart, it was rough. It was a rough way to lose a game.
Painful. 16-point halftime lead evaporates in the blink of an eye. Let's get to our takeaways here on Cougar Nation.
Cougar Nation, takeaways. Mitch and Matt analyze BYU's last week of play and what it means for the next week.
We'll get to your calls in just a moment, 801-575-8255. But first, the number one takeaway for me, Nate, the margin for error is so slim in the Big 12. These are extremely talented teams that can flip the switch in a moment's notice, like we saw Saturday night down in Lubbock. That 16-point halftime lead, it felt like it was slashed in half within 2 minutes. And with like 17 minutes to go, you felt like, oh boy, the lead is gone. The momentum's in favor of the Red Raiders. And you just can't have those type of scoring droughts, those type of sequences where you have multiple turnovers that lead to threes and get teams to the foul line. You can't have a 4 or 5 minute lapse because these teams are so good, they'll take advantage. And that's what happened right out of the gate. Is Texas Tech had the urgency right after the halftime break, and they dialed up the pressure on Dallin Hall, on Richie Saunders, on the guards. They were forcing turnovers, and before you knew it, the lead was gone, and it was a battle to the end. So, man, the margin for error is thin. You have to play consistent basketball for 40 minutes like BYU did against Iowa State earlier in the week. You do that, I think this BYU team has proven they can beat maybe anybody in the Big 12. But if you take your foot off the gas for a minute, you can find yourselves in a real bad spot like they did. Takeaway number two. On a positive note, Richie Saunders is playing some of the best basketball of his life. And he's making an argument for increased playing time. He got the start in place of Noah Waterman, who, if you remember, against Iowa State, he left the game with a concussion. It was a scary play where his head hits the back of the floor. He goes to the locker room before halftime, gets evaluated, comes back out, plays the second half. And I think we're all thinking, okay, a crisis averted here. Noah Waterman's good to go. He's been a great defender this year for BYU. When he's making three-point shots, he's a difference maker. And did we mention he's 6'10"? So it's nice to have that kind of size along with Ali Khalifa in the starting lineup. And then we hear right before tip-off, Noah Waterman did not clear concussion protocol, and they're going to start Richie Saunders. And you're thinking, okay, it's only his third start of his career, first of the season. What are you going to get from Richie? He just continued playing great basketball like he's been playing all throughout conference play. 16 points, and he is so good at cutting to the basket. He's almost like a perfect fit with Al Khalifa. He's always cutting, getting to the rim. I love that 4 of his 6 made field goals were inside the three-point line. Then he goes 2 of 2 from the three-point line, adds a couple rebounds as well. Good, tenacious defender. Richie Saunders he's ready for more playing time. When everyone's healthy, I don't know how you juggle it all, but clearly Richie Saunders has been one of the most consistent players on this team. And then takeaway number three, second half turnovers in these losses are proving to be deadly, just absolutely deadly. 22-4 advantage for Texas Tech in the second half, excuse me, for the game. So you're minus 18 in turnovers. I know you only committed 12, eight of those coming in the second half, though, where it just kept igniting the crowd. It kept fueling transition opportunities for Pop Isaacs, who scored 32 points, 23 of them in the second half. It felt like a lot of those back-breaking buckets from Texas Tech, it came off of a BYU turnover. And especially late in the game, there was one play where Dallin Hall drove to the basket, and he's done this a few times late in these games where it doesn't look like he's wanting to go up to the rim and finish it. And so he drives in, and then the defense collapses on him. It turns into a turnover. They go the other way, bury a three, and you're like, ah, that was a five-point swing if you just go and attack the basket with the intent to score. So these turnovers are killing us. Let's get to our first call here on Cougar Nation, 801-575-8255. Let's go to our dear friend, Linda. Linda, what do you got tonight?
I think they really clam up when they're been losing, you know, on the road like that. I think it really makes them clam up. And I really felt like that first half on Saturday was really good. You know, it was really good, and we played so well. And then the second half, as we were playing and we tried to make shots, we couldn't do it.
Yep. You're right, Linda. And that's honestly, and it's kind of hard to tell yourself this because you want to have different answers, but basketball, it is so often a make or miss league. And in the first half, you go 10 to 20 from three, 50% from three, double digit threes and a half. Of course you're going to be up double digits. And in the second half, you go 3 of 19, 15% from downtown. It's going to be hard to sustain any success when you're shooting that poorly throughout an extended stretch of time. And they've got to find a way to get to the free throw line or do something when they're not hitting the three like they did in the second half. Let's get to another call here. Ryan from Tooele talking about that second half where everything went wrong for BYU. What do you have for us, Ryan?
Well, in the first half, they're doing really well and shooting really well. But then in the second half, we're up by a lot, and we're just playing not to lose. They're playing to win, and they really have the fire in them that they need the comeback, and they want, and they're scoring lots of points because they have the fire to win while we're just trying to, like, not let them score. We're just playing not to lose.
Yeah, it did feel that way a little bit, Ryan, in the second half, where it just felt like, okay, we've got a lead. Let's try and protect it. But the problem is, if you're not being aggressive, it's advantageous for the defense. BYU only had two fast break points in that entire game against Texas Tech, where Iowa State, they were getting up and down throughout. And so I think that's a really good point that when BYU tries to sit back and they allow the pressure to come all the way up to half court, and then they're not attacking the rim. I think that's another thing I noticed in the second half is it just felt like all five Texas Tech defenders were on the perimeter, daring BYU to put the ball on the floor and get to the rim and do something, and they could not punish them enough at the rim. And that's in the wins. Like, I love looking at the Iowa State win earlier in the week compared to the Texas Tech game, because in the Iowa State game, they played their best basketball of the year throughout an entire game, and the common threads were getting to the free throw line, attacking the basket. Look, we know that this team loves to shoot threes. Coach Pope has said it all season long. We want to take a lot of threes. We're upset if we don't take 30 threes. We want to shoot the three. But you have to complement that with putting pressure on the rim. And when this team can put pressure on the rim, it opens up the three-point line. And that's the thing, is they have to continue to put pressure on the three-point line and also getting to the basket. When they do those two things together, then you see a result like you did against Iowa State. When you don't, when you can't get to the rim, when you can't get to the free throw line, it makes it a lot more difficult to sustain it for 40 minutes because, look, you're going to have moments where you shoot 50% from three and you look great, but can it be sustained? And the answer against Texas Tech was it could not be sustained. We got to take our first break here in Cougar Nation. Love the calls. We'll take some more on the other side. 801-575-8255. Why does BYU struggle in the second half in Big 12 conference play? That's what we want to hear from you. We'll see you on the other side. Stay with us.
BYU fans, join me, Tim Hughes, and Amanda Dixon for stories that affect our jobs, taxes, and families. Utah's Morning News, each morning between 5 and 9 on KSL News Radio.
Welcome back into Cougar Nation. We're breaking down BYU's loss against Texas Tech on Saturday night, and we're taking your calls. And then a little later in the program, we'll look ahead to a huge opportunity and test for the Cougars tomorrow night against number 4 Houston, one of the country's best teams. Remember, this team was the top overall seed in the NCAA tournament last season. They are dang good. We'll preview that matchup a little later on, but we want to hear from you. That's why we do the show every single Monday night, 6 to 7 p.m. We want to take your calls, Cougar Nation, 801-575-8255. And specifically, why do you think this team has struggled in the second half of Big 12 games? Because it seems like a recurring theme. We saw it in the first Big 12 game against Cincinnati, where they went cold and lost the opener. Then they go down to Baylor, and they played well again in this brand-new arena down in Waco. In the second half, it slipped away. Then they go to UCF. Looks like they're going to have a nice, comfortable win, and it nearly slips out of their fingers. They hang on and get a big win down in Orlando. They come back earlier in the week. They beat Iowa State, and you think, man, maybe they figured something out here, and it completely carried over into the first half against Texas Tech, where they were playing some of the best basketball we've seen in years, as Nate Slack said earlier in the program. And in the second half, it's the wheels fell off. It felt like they couldn't get a good look. The good looks they had, they were missing. And I think one thing that was a little concerning too in this Texas Tech game, and this is why I think at times this team is susceptible to struggles, is I don't know if this team has an alpha dog, somebody in a pressure situation who you can just say, clear out, give this guy a bucket, he's going to give us a good look. And you would love for that to be Dallin Hall. You would love for that to be Jackson Robinson. And at moments they can do that. I just don't know if they've done it consistently enough to where you feel like, okay, we know we can count on these guys in the difficult situations. You look at the numbers for Jackson Robinson. He's been in a bit of a slump recently. 3-12. He got the start. Remember, he started for Trevin Nell, who got hurt against UCF. Trevin Nell did play. That was an encouraging sign. He came off the bench in the first half. He had a couple threes. You're like, okay, baby, let's go. Trevin Nell, he's ripping it. He didn't take any field goals in the second half. That was a little concerning because he's one of the best shot makers on the team. But Jackson Robinson gets the start in his place. 3-12. 2-10 from three. He was moving the ball around fairly well. He had 4 assists, but 3-12, 25% from Jackson Robinson, who he's risen up the NBA draft boards. Some people are predicting he might be a late round, first round pick in this upcoming draft. If he has that type of potential, you'd love to be able to give him the ball late in games or in these pressure situations where you feel like, man, we need to have a bucket. And then some of the other more experienced players, not a great night for Spencer Johnson, 4 points, 2 of 9, 0 of 5 from 3. Really unfortunate at the end of that game where he had a transition 3. He pulled up. It could have went either way. It ended up only being a 2. That would have cut the lead to 3 with about a minute to go. It doesn't go their way. But Spencer Johnson, 4 points. Jackson Robinson, 8 points. That's tough for two of your starting guard forwards and really good two-way players. They've got to come correct when the pressure's dialed up. And in the second half, too, 2 points between the two. 0-6 for Jackson Robinson, 1-5 for Spencer Johnson. Without Ali Khalifa in his heroics, 15 points in the second half, man, I don't know what the score would have been because Khalifa was doing some hero work to keep BYU alive when it felt like, man, maybe Texas Tech is going to beat them by double digits, which would have been crazy after having a 48-32 point lead. Nate, why do you think this team is struggling so much in the second half? Is it that they don't have an alpha dog that they can go to, or are they just simply not making enough shots?
I think that's part of it, but I think a bigger thing is we talk about this a lot in football, is having depth, And at the start of the season, there was a lot of depth. We talked about having a possibly 10 or 11-man team for this season, but with the loss of Dawson Baker, Foose's injury, Trevin was injured last week, Noah Waterman misses the game. One guy who didn't play at all was Atiki Aliatiki, and we haven't even really heard about the reason why, and that's kind of gone under the radar. But I think the lack of depth is showing, and it's something that the team has to be able to figure out. Otherwise, it's going to be hard to win games in the Big 12.
And on your point of depth, Dawson Baker earlier in the week was announced as being out for the remainder of the year. He'll get a medical redshirt. He'll have two more years of eligibility next year. He just never got right from that foot injury in the offseason. That's probably the most painful submission of them all, because his skill set, Nate, is honestly what this team needs. He can create off the dribble. He's probably the team's best one-on-one. Clear out, I'll do something with it. You saw his creativity in flashes right before conference play. Him being shut down for the year is a huge blow, because there's nobody else on the team that has the skill set that Dawson Baker has.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think having to start Richie Saunders and Jackson Robinson, they're good players and they probably deserve to start. And they would definitely be starting on other BYU teams. But I think it takes away an advantage BYU had, where they would be able to put these guys in, you know, at the 16-minute mark or 12-minute mark when the other starters are coming out for the other team. And BYU all of a sudden loses that advantage, and they're having to turn to Townsend Triple. And he hit a big three-pointer early in the Texas Tech game, but that's not necessarily somebody you want to see coming off the bench on the
it's not fair to Townsend.
No,
right?
Not
to
at
expect
all.
Him to come in this situation and be scoring points, that's not fair to Townsend. Nate, we got to get out to the phone line. This is Cougar Nation. We take fans' calls, 801-575-8255. Nate from Cedar Hills, what do you got for us, Nate?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Love the Cougars. Love this team this year. Been very excited about them. You know, I wouldn't hit the panic button too quick, but there was definitely some things that were concerning in the game when you lose a lead that big. It seems like, and you can't always tell from the fans' perspective what's going on right on the court, but it seems like when their best guy keeps making threes over and over again, putting pressure on him and rotating off picks a lot quicker, getting out, it seems like they're a little bit watching him shoot. They weren't getting in his face, trying to, you know, make sure that he took him out of his rhythm. They just kept going back to him because he kept getting open threes, and that killed us when he has that many threes. It seems like the announcer said on the game, too, if you're watching on TV, hey, you know, BYU has stopped attacking the basket. We could have gone after their big man who already had three fouls and draw more fouls. You know, just anything, just to go aggressive out to the basket. Seems like we started driving, we were tentative and started kicking it back out again, and we're losing balls on turnovers. So that was kind of a miss. Yeah, it seems like Jackson Robinson, he's been awesome early in the season. We love him as a player, but he seems like he was shooting everything short. And so I don't know if it's just a mental thing, if they're just, you know, tentative and not shooting confidently at the end when they saw the guy a little frazzled or something, and we're losing a lot of turnovers, you know, dribbling too much, not enough maybe picks and getting guys open. And so hopefully we can resolve some of that stuff tomorrow, because I'll be down there at the Houston game watching, cheering on the Cougs. It's going to be a big game, awesome opportunity.
Hard opponent, Nate, to correct some of those issues against, right? Number four in the country.
Yep. And we're going to talk a little bit more about them at the end of the hour, but they're probably the best defensive team in the country in terms of points per game and steals and blocks. And it's just, unless BYU can replicate what they did against Iowa State last week, which they did, they attacked the rim. They weren't settling for 43 pointers. I think it's going to be a long night tomorrow night. Potentially.
I loved what Nate said too, because I felt the same exact way. They weren't attacking the basket enough. And he wondered why this BYU defense didn't get out on Pop Isaacs. That's the player he's referring to. 5 of 7 from three, 32 points. I felt like it was the turnovers, Nate. There were so many turnovers in that second half that led to runouts where Pop Isaac was just coming down the floor. The guys were running back in transition defense, not knowing where to go, and he took advantage of that. When you turn the ball over, it has such a dramatic impact on the game in so many areas. I thought the turnovers was the number one reason why Pop Isaacs just went bananas in the second half.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Nate, we better take a break. News, traffic, and weather coming your way on the other side. We'll get to what's trending and more of your calls here on Cougar Nation.
Just like Cougar fans come together for BYU basketball, the community gathers around KSL each morning for important news. Listen tomorrow between 5 and 9 to KSL News Radio.
Welcome back into Cougar Nation. Recapping the Texas Tech game from Saturday and looking ahead to the Houston game tomorrow night. Looking forward to that one. That should be a really fun environment. I think there's still some tickets left. So,
are there really?
There are. I think there's a couple hundred tickets.
Dang. You got to get those. It's not often a number four team comes into the country. So, look, it's not often that BYU plays this many ranked teams in a row. Mitch Harper, who is not here today, he's in California with his family, a little vacation for the BYU insider, Mitch. Look, he tweeted out, it's been like 40 years since BYU played three consecutive ranked teams. So this Big 12, man, it's something else, isn't it, Nate?
Oh, it is, for sure.
All right, let's get to what's trending.
Cougar Nation, trending. What's trending up and what's trending down this season?
All right, I'll start things off. We do this every single week, where we give you something that's trending up and trending down. For me, I'll start things off with trending up. Richie Saunders, I talked about him earlier in the program, but man, he's playing some dang good basketball. Second on the team in scoring against Texas Tech. He's shooting over 40% from three in his last three games, and this is someone who is known as a great defender, maybe not the best shooter. Well, he's shooting the ball really well. He might be the team's best cutter to the basket, which works perfectly with Ali Khalifa. I think Richie Saunders is making a big case to get more playing time.
Yeah, I was up and down between Ali Khalifa and Richie Saunders. I ended up going with Ali Khalifa. It's kind of the easy answer just because what he did on Saturday. We always talk about his passing abilities, but I think his passing abilities has opened up more in his game. We haven't seen him score like he did on Saturday, and the fact that he scored 15 points to the 30 that BYU had in the second half, I don't think that's necessarily a recipe for success. But if other players can start hitting their shots in addition to Khalifa scoring at the basket, I think that can be a big thing for BYU basketball.
Trending down, you touched on it, but I think it's worth a larger discussion. Atiki Aliatiki, why did he not play? And he hardly played against Iowa State. He's played 3 minutes in the last two games. Now, the Texas Tech game could have very well been, hey, like, there's not really a place for him. Because when Noah Waterman went out, I did think it was somewhat telling that they went to Townsend triple for a little bit because triple can stretch the floor. Mm-hmm. That's not something Atiki Aliatiki can do. He can't step out and hit threes. And so maybe you're thinking, hey, if we're going to play Foose as the down low guy, we can't play two of them. We still have to stretch the floor. So I kind of get it from that perspective. But what doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me about Atiki Aliatiki not playing is I felt like he was ascending at the end of the non-conference play. He had 17 against Wyoming before the calendar year turned to 2024. It felt like this dude is a reliable rotation player, and now he has fallen out. It's a little confusing, and I wonder against Houston, a team that is going to slow the pace. Look, UCF only scored 42 points over the weekend against Houston in a loss. It's not going to be run and gun. I wonder if we'll see more Atiki Aliatiki in that type of game. But if he doesn't play against Houston tomorrow, then we got to ask as media members, what happened to Atiki? Because I felt like he had played his way into the rotation, Nate.
Yeah, who I have trending down is Jackson Robinson. And that hurts to say because just a month ago, we talked about him being a possible first-round NBA draft pick. And since he suffered that ankle sprain, he just hasn't been the same player. On December 13th against Denver, he was 8 of 16 from 3. And so 8 made 3-pointers, that's one of the 5 most in BYU history. And since that game, he is 8 for 37. So he went from 8-16 one night to 8 for 37, so 22% since that injury. And he's clearly not healthy. Ankles are kind of tricky. Sometimes they can linger a little longer than other injuries, and I feel like BYU really needs Jackson Robinson to return to his non-conference form in order to be able to compete for a good spot in the Big 12 tournament.
When he was at his peak, Nate, this was the number one team in the nation in bench scoring. It just felt like, man, there's this second wave that comes in, and there's nothing you can do about it. And since the slump, BYU's barely hanging on to the top 15 in bench scoring. So bench production has went way down. And some of that is because Jackson has been forced to start with the injuries. But you're totally right. It does feel like a lot of these lapses in scoring has coincided with Jackson Robinson's inconsistent play as of late. And you're totally right. If BYU wants to get some big wins down the road, they've got to have good scoring from him. He's a difference maker. When he's on, he is dangerous. But what he did against Texas Tech, 3 of 12 from the field, 2 of 10 from 3, and didn't score a point in the second half. It's hard to win in the Big 12 when some of your best players are having that kind of offensive output.
Yeah, you just can't do that. The first 10 games, he had one game under 12 points. And in the last seven, he scored 2, 10, 5, 10, 7, 15, and 8. And he really needs to get on track. And if he's
and
not
15
able to,
in the win against Iowa State, right?
Exactly. 15 in the win. And honestly, those 15 may have not even been a difference maker in that game. There was so much working for BYU already. They need him to come up in games where they need him in the second half.
We're taking your calls here on Cougar Nation. We got one more segment to go on the other side, so there's still a little bit of time if you want to chime in on the loss against Texas Tech. Is it time to hit the panic button? I don't think so yet, but if it is, let us know. 801-575-8255. Taking your calls, Cougar Nation. On the other side, let's talk about this Houston matchup. And look, if you want to chime in about Texas Tech, we'd love to have you call in. But there's a big game tomorrow. Again, it's the Cougars and the Cougars. It's a mountain cat battle, Nate, and we'll break it down on the other side. Stay with us here, Cougar Nation.
Make sure you have the KSL News Radio app to stream BYU games wherever you go. You can also get breaking news alerts and podcast your favorite KSL show, all on one app for KSL News Radio.
Cougar Nation, one more segment to go, breaking down the loss against Texas Tech. And looking ahead to Houston, Matt Biamonte alongside Nate Slack. No Mitch Harper. He's on vacation. Hope he's having a great time down in Southern California. Eating lots of churros, enjoying Disneyland as we all do. And we'll look forward to having him back. But
what's your go-to snack? What's your go-to snack at Disneyland?
Oh, it's the churro. And then specifically, Nate, I like a cold Diet Coke at the Pizza Planet. Only at the Pizza Planet. I want to put in the right amount of ice, and I want to take a few sips and top it off. So that's one of the few places at Disneyland where you get to fill your own drink. So a cold Diet Coke from Pizza Planet, a crispy churro. I'm loving life. What about you?
I'm double fist in churros. I'm just going to town on churros.
Do you like a regular churro or some of their like specialty strawberry fillings, or you just like the regular?
I just get the regular. I'm kind of a boring that way. I like just maple bar donuts and glazed donuts and regular churros. That's me.
One of the underrated things about Disneyland is you can double fist a churro because you'll be walking so much, you'll burn them right off.
Walking a lot and waiting in line.
No doubt about it. All right. Hey, before we turn the page to Houston, big battle tomorrow night, and we'll have you covered at KSLSports.com. We got another call. This is from Cedar Hills, a lovely part of Utah. Scott wants to chime in about the second half troubles for BYU basketball. What do you have for us, Scott?
Well, I think, like I was saying, they come out and play top-notch basketball in the first half. It's very exciting. And then they play church ball intramural style the second half. And like Ryan said earlier, they play not to lose rather than keeping the pedal to the metal and playing hard and win. And even listening to the announcers on the TV, I'd rather listen to Greg, but sometimes I'm not near the radio. But they even say that you know, they've stopped playing, they're not attacking, they're not moving the ball, they're playing, you know, they don't have any one-on-one players. So, Dallin, put the ball in the hoop when you go drive the basket. But
yeah.
Stop playing intramural, guys. Keep the pressure on and play like you do the first half.
Yeah,
I don't
thanks
know if
for
it's
the
conditioning thing or what.
Yeah, thanks for the call. I would love Dallin to be a little more aggressive, getting to the rim. At times, we've seen it. I think there's two things we need to bring up quickly, Nate. Number one, Dallin is still a sophomore. Like, there's a lot of great basketball ahead for Dallin Hall. We've seen the flashes of brilliance. Maybe the standard is a little bit high for Dallin right now because, and this leads me to my second point, BYU was not exposed to these type of situations very often during their time in the WCC. Like, what, maybe three or four times a year in conference play with St. Mary's and Gonzaga and an occasional scare from somebody else. I just, every night, it's just another level of intensity. And I think sometimes we forget when you're making that kind of jump, because to me it feels like they're making the jump from high school basketball to college basketball. That feels like the difference between consistent Big 12 play versus WCC play. Like, they're not comparable, and maybe we aren't valuing enough how hard of an adjustment it is to sustain this type of play night after night after night for 40 minutes, because you can't show up against anybody, Nate, and just play one half and expect to win, because as we saw against Texas Tech, 20 minutes of good basketball is not good enough.
Yeah, and if you thought Texas Tech was tough, just wait till tomorrow night. Here's some numbers from Houston. So these are national rankings for the Houston defense. They're number one in points allowed. They're averaging 51 points per game for their opponent. That's 7.1 points per game better than number two, Virginia. They're also number one in defensive efficiency, number one in effective field goal percentage, number one in two-point percentage, number one in block percentage, number one in steal percentage, number three in turnover percentage, and the list goes on and on. So BYU's got its work cut out for them tomorrow, and hopefully they're able to play like they did last Tuesday. I have been impressed with BYU on the quick turnarounds. I was a little nervous about having a game on Saturday and travel and getting home late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, one day of practice on Monday and then playing on Tuesday. But they've done well for that, doing that so far. So hopefully that continues tomorrow.
Houston is so good, man. It's what they have done over the past couple of years. Because remember, the last time these two teams met was back in 2019. And this was, were you a Greg Wrubell intern that year?
I was. And I was working in the studio that game. So it was kind of a bummer because I listened to the buzzer beater before I saw it on TV. But it was still cool to be behind the scenes on that.
That was a great moment. Jason Shepard of BYU Radio, he was down on the call with Mark Durant. And I just remember Mark Durant, TJ! But that was the TJ Haas. I don't know how that shot went in. It was like dead sprint to the corner, fadeaway, gets the bucket. The reason I bring that game up, though, is Houston at that time was not the Houston we know today. Coach Kelvin Sampson has cranked it up since the last meeting to where, as you mentioned, with all those statistics, this is one of the most daunting defensive teams in all of college basketball. They've been that way for 2 years now. They're an experienced group. They're coming off their first Big 12 Conference Player of the Week award. It was their point guard, Jamal Sheed. He's averaging 19 points a game, but defensively, they are relentless. And what concerns me about this matchup is the one thing that seems to really bother BYU in conference play, Nate, is when the guards come up to half court and they hound you. Because this league, it's physical. It's not as ticky-tack as other leagues. You can get away with stuff on the perimeter. And teams like Texas Tech, Baylor, UCF even, had tremendous success harassing BYU's guards far away from the basket. And that's exactly what Houston is going to do.
How do you feel about it being a home game? Because Houston hasn't won a Big 12 game on the road yet. They've got losses at Iowa State and losses to TCU. Granted, they were close, but do you feel like BYU has a better chance with it being a home game?
100%. I don't see how BYU wins this game on the road. At home, this is where Cougar Nation can make an impact. Because look, at the end of the day, we say this all the time, Nate. These are still college kids. They're kids. These are professionals. They're juggling class and social life and basketball. There's a lot on their plate. And I feel like the home road, it swings more in college basketball than it does at the NBA level. And there's an opportunity if BYU gets on an 8-0 run, the crowd's on their feet. They're going crazy. They get a stop. Like, they can really put pressure on Houston. I'm talking about BYU fans, by bringing a Gonzaga-like atmosphere to the Marriott Center, because there's not a lot of places that teams can play that is like the Marriott Center. There's some hard places to play, don't get me wrong, but how many places can pack in close to 20,000 fans and the place is going crazy and you got the Rock? Like, I want this to be a sellout because I think BYU fans can greatly influence this game and make it difficult on Houston. Whereas if this was down in Texas, I just feel like, man, Houston would suffocate you. They'd take control of the game. The crowd would be in their favor. I wouldn't see any chance for a win in Texas. But at home, If BYU can capitalize on those short spurts where the fans are engaged, hit a couple threes, I think they can be beat. Like you said, Houston has been beaten in conference play. They're number four. Statistically, they're great, but they're not – just like every team in college basketball this year, Nate, I'm ranting a little bit here, so I'll give you the floor in just a moment. But I don't feel like there's anyone in the Big 12 that is dominant. There's no great teams that we're going to look back on in the Big 12 and say, that was Christian Laettner and the Duke Blue Devils. There's nobody like that. Anyone can be beat. Kansas just got beat by West Virginia, for heaven's sake, who we thought was a bottom feeder in the conference. So anyone can be beat, especially when teams are on the road in the Marriott Center, and it's up to Cougar fans to get there early, to be loud, and to create a great atmosphere of the Marriott Center.
My last 2 cents is this is a huge opportunity for BYU for this season as well, because it's the only chance they're going to have to play Houston this entire year. They don't have to make a return trip to Houston, and they don't have to make a return trip for Texas either. So these games this week, BYU has a chance to steal a couple games. They had a game stolen from them against Cincinnati, but they have a couple good chances to get back on track at home and get back in the win column in the Big 12 standings.
It's such a good point, too, because not making that return trip, that's advantageous. And I also feel like, tell me if you feel the same way, this is the type of win that, and it's a big if, I'm not saying that it's going to happen by any stretch of the imagination, but this is if they were to get the win, I guess that's where I'm trying to get to. If they get the win, Nate, this feels like it's almost good enough to get you in the tournament. It's gonna hold that much weight.
Yep.
Beating Houston at home. Now you still got to win a few more games, but if you go 7-11 in conference play, but you got to win against Houston, you're getting in the tournament. Like it's a massive opportunity for this BYU basketball team. What's your prediction? Do you like the Cougs, the Blue Cougs, or the Red Cougs tomorrow, Nate?
You know, after all this stuff I've said, I'm still riding with
Don't do it, Nate!
I'm doing it. The Blue Cougs. And it's because of Marriott Center magic. I think the place is going to be sold out. There's still plenty of time to buy tickets. And I think BYU can get it done. They're going to have a healthy team. So Atiki's going to have to play. Waterman's going to have to play. Nell's going to have to be able to put more shots up. But assuming everybody's healthy and able to go tomorrow, I'm going to take the Cougs. I'm going to take them by two. We'll go. It's not going to be a high-scoring game. We'll go 64-62 BYU.
I can't get there. I have to go with the Red Cougs just because there's been too much up and down play. But if there was ever a time for BYU fans to make a difference, and I'm talking 2019, Gonzaga at home, you got Yoli, you got Toulson, you got TJ. That place was electric. One of the best environments I've ever been in any sporting event in my life.
Yep.
That had a huge impact on the game. If BYU fans can do that. And look, I know it's a Tuesday night. You can't be showing up late. Like, get off of work early, get the kids home early, get down to the Marriott Center and make a difference, because this is the type of game that could swing a season. I think that's great stuff, Nate. Nate, it's been a pleasure having you on Cougar Nation with us. Our producer, Nate Slack, doing a great job holding down for Mitch Harper. So for Nate Slack, I'm Matt Biamonte. Cougar Nation, every Monday night, 6-7. We'll see you next week.